Yes, I can. With the monarchs, yes. No, only in the Negro Leagues, I played, started with Memphis in 37, and then I came to Monarchs in 38, and I finished my career with the Monarchs. Well, in the beginning, we were just playing semi-pro ball, so I was with a team and we traveled quite a bit, and that was just kind of nip and tuck thing, and we were playing on a percentage, so if you didn't get nothing and nothing came in the gates, you got nothing. So that's the way it was with that type ball. But it was when I came to the Monarchs. Now I'm on salary. Now that is big league. Oh, well, and that happened when the Clowns came on in the league. No, before the league, they were playing out there. The Clowns, that was the Ethiopian Clowns and the Zulus, Cannibal Giants. They played like that, just clowning around. But that wasn't in our ball, in the Negro American and National League. Now, when the Clowns came in, then they did some clowning, but they actually had clowns doing the clowning. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, in the House of Davids, both House of Davids, the Black House of Davids and the White House of Davids, they were strictly entertainment, but I tell you, the White House of Davids had some pretty good ball players on that ball club. A lot of guys that had played in the major leagues played on that ball club, and a lot of guys on the way to the major leagues would play with the House of Davids because they could make pretty good money because the House of Davids was a good draw all over the country and mostly the Northwest. I met Satchel in Wichita in 35. Satchel was with the Bismarck Ball Club. And he had jumped the Pittsburgh Crawfords and went out to Bismarck to play. And he, Quincy Troupe, Hilton Smith, Tret Brewer, those guys were on the Bismarck Ball Club who won the first national tournament there in Wichita in 35. That's when I saw the great Satchel Paige. Oh my goodness! It was darn near impossible to hit him. He set a record out there, cause he played with some pretty good ball players, but ball teams. But they were, semi-pro ball clubs. Most of them, the all fields had ball clubs out there and good ball players too. Cause a lot of the ball players, I think, just if they had taken the chance, they could have gone to the major leagues. But you know how kids marry early and started a family. So that job in the oil field was more security than it would have been going to D ball, B or A ball, see, because they didn't make that much money. So they couldn't support the family, so they went into the oil fields and things like that, industry. Oh, yeah, very good. Well, I saw Smokey, but Smokey was older when I saw Smokey pitch, but what they're saying how great Smokey was, but I just can't see anybody being any better than Satchel at his prime, for the simple reason that Satchel actually couldn't do no wrong on the pitching mound when he was in his prime. It was just a natural thing for Satchel. Everything Satchel did was right on that mound. But the things I heard about Smokey Joe, he was outstanding. And Satchel was more or less a showman, too. I think this is why Satchel got a lot of the publicity. Oh, yeah. The surprising part about it is a lot of people didn't realize, but when Satchel went to Cleveland, the major leagues, now Satchel was probably getting a cut because Satchel, a cut in salary, because Satchel was making more money in Negro baseball than he did when he went to the major league because of what he was doing. See, Satchel, the way the Monarchs used Satchel was Satchel pitched for some of everybody. He belonged to the Monarchs, but we would lease him out to other ball clubs. Like he would play pitch here in Kansas City. He'd pitch three innings Sunday, and Monday he probably even just might pitch in Memphis for the Memphis Red Sox and every way he pitched, he drew a crowd and might pitch with some semi-pro team someplace in North Dakota or Canada. But all of this, and Satchel was getting a percentage of these gates. So he was making good money. That wouldn't be playing against us, but just like the Memphis Red Sox would need to make the payroll, they would want Satchel on a special day, and they could make it, because he would pack the ballpark for them. Yeah. Yeah, well, and it was just with Satchel pace, it's a change of pace. It was a change of pace, but as hard as Satchel threw, and he threw it with that same motion, and it was actually a stop. He would come to a complete stop with everything but his arm, and his arm would come over, that long arm would come over, he'd walk that ball up to you. Then he'd do the same thing and stop and throw you a fastball. So it was, you actually didn't know when it was coming, and when it did come, you probably wanted to catch it. In 48. I started managing the team in 48, and I managed through 55. It was just that was an asinine statement because of the fact the who Campanis really knew was people that had worked for, that he knew, and the black people that he knew were actually ball players that he had seen with the Dodgers. But even at that, why it was an asinine statement, because I believe Campanella, who had been on his ball club, would have been an outstanding manager. I believe Gilliam could have made an outstanding manager who coached for them for years. And I don't know. I just don't know why he would make that. Because, well, one thing about it, see, I knew Campanis. I thought, and I knew Campanis was a pretty decent man, but it was just a statement. I don't know. Sometimes when you put that mic in people's hand, they come up saying some things they regret that they said it, really. Yeah, but if he was Jackie's roommate, it must have roommate. It just had to have been with a barnstorming tour or something after the season, because doing it and because and he was only here in 45, and Radcliffe wasn't with the Monarch. He was a good ball player. Yeah, Radcliffe was a good ball player and a good catcher and a pitcher, but it had good stuff on the ball, good fastball, and we said he kind of doctored the ball, which a lot of pitchers did in our league, kind of doctored the ball, but he could really throw, because he caught against us in Oklahoma City in a doubleheader one Sunday, and he pitched the second ball game. And the second ball game, he really beat us the second ball game. We beat him the first ball game, they beat us the second ball game. But had good stuff. And he was a jovial type guy, really enjoyed what he was doing, and he was a lot of fun. There you go, I told you about that. I never saw that, but you know, it's a whole lot of things come up that people say. You know, a lot of myths, I think, they say them to for people to laugh. But I have seen that on people, but that was more or less sandlot ball. And maybe in Mobile, he might have had that on his chest protector, but he didn't have it in the Negro League. Well, and as a scout, I would have picked Jackie on ability, because Jackie had the potential to be just what he turned out to be, outstanding ball player, and the smarts, the know-how. Jackie was very intelligent baseball player, and the ideal choice because of the fact that Jackie realized what it meant more so than a lot of the ball players that I think could have been better than Jackie at the time was ready to step right into the major leagues. But I don't think they would have stood up under what Jackie did, because I'm sure if someone had slid in with the spikes high on one of those guys, he just might have punched him. And some of the remarks, I'm sure the umpires said to Jackie, some of the other ball players would have probably retaliated if the umpire had said those things to him, and that could have set us back maybe 30, 40 more years, because I think a lot of people were just waiting for Jackie to do some of the things that it was just another ball player would have done it. Say a white ball player would have done it, and he would have been suspended for maybe a couple of ball games, but with Jackie, he would have been suspended for life. That could have had something. Yeah, it could have had something, but see, because Jackie knew the struggle more so than another guy would know the struggle, because I think Jackie had gone through a lot of things, because Jackie was on a ball club where it was maybe two or three blacks and 40 whites, and I know a lot of things had gone on that he knew how to roll with the punches where another guy wouldn't, some of the guys that we'd played with, because we were in all-black situation. Well, and it's that right now, it's more or less subtle. That's just what it is, subtle. Wherein, in before, it was just, you just knew it. You just knew it. The man didn't have to tell you. And one thing about that, you knew a little more where you stood and what you could do. And, you know, as far as Jackie was concerned and the segregation and the trouble that he had, Jackie didn't have as much trouble as a Hank Aaron would have had, because Jackie went from the Kansas City Monarchs to Montreal. And you know, it's a lot of difference playing in Montreal than would have been in Alabama. So this was the big difference of playing in A ball or double A ball in the South was quite a bit different than playing in triple A ball in the North. That was the big difference. That's right. No. See, when I started scouting, see, I started scouting in 56. I started scouting in 56, and I was hired for simply one reason. I was hired to scout the black kid. That was the black colleges, and all of those were, the majority were in the South. The black colleges, the black high schools, that's what I was hired for. And instead of having a heart, well, and I had to really, the run of the mill, because I was the only guy out there that was doing that. They had some other black scouts, but I'm sure Pompey, he was full-time with the Giants, but the other scouts that were out there, black scouts, were more or less part-time for some other scout. See, and but with me, I was a full-time scout, and I visited all the black colleges, and I was, in a kind of way, I was kind of celebrity, really, because I was the first one out there, and I stayed at maybe the president's home on the campus. And I did a lot of things that the other scouts didn't do, just because you know what I mean, I was the first black out there. I had some privileges that other scouts didn't. Well, the Lew Johnson, George Altman, all of these guys now signed those two guys, Altman and with the Monarchs, and then we sold them to the Cubs. But they were my signs, and I signed Lee Arthur Smith to a contract with the Cubs, he's with St. Louis now, and I signed Joe Carter, and several other guys that I signed that played organized baseball, played Major League Baseball, really. That's right. That was, well, it came about by, when the 1962, the Mr. Wrigley had the Council of Coaches. So he brought in some guys, and it must have been, about six or seven of us there, the Council of Coaches, to run the ball club instead of just the manager. So this is the way that happened. So I was one of the guys that brought in. So that's why I happened to been the first black coach in the major leagues. And we even with that, the Jim Enright asked me that, "Oh, Buck, I know you are so elated for being the first black coach in the major leagues." I said, "Well, I'm glad to be a coach in the major leagues, because it pays a little more, and for me being the coach, but I'm not too elated because, Jim, that's Jim Enright." I say, I met Rube Foster, I knew Frank Duncan, I knew Jim Taylor, I knew C.I. Taylor, all of these guys. This was baseball 75 years old then, and I'm just being the first black coach. So it wasn't nothing for me to push my chest out about, because guys should have been there 50 years before me. Oh, yeah. Well, and one thing about it was a natural for me, because actually I had worked for the Cubs since 56, and I'd signed a lot of the ball players, and I knew, and I saw every ball player in the Cub organization. I would go to spring training with the Cubs, and I'd stay in spring training when the minor league team came, and I stayed there, and I learned all of the ball players, and I visited every one of the Cubs ball clubs in the summer to make a report on the ball club. So I knew all of the ball clubs, and actually, to tell you the truth, I just might have known more about in the Cubs system than anybody there. Well, and I retired from the Cubs, I guess in 88, but I came right over and started working for the Royals. I scout the American League now for the Royals, and I am the chairman of the board of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum here in Kansas City. So it keeps me quite busy. No. I don't think it's a case of not wanting blacks. It's just well, one thing about it is now in the we're talking radio now, and the Giants just hired a woman, which is all of these years in baseball, this is the first time they've had a woman in that broadcasting these ball games, talking about these ball games in the baseball park. That's the first time. And this is because I think is I know a lot of women, they've been qualified to do that, but you got to be in the right place and the right time for people to make these changes. And far as the blacks in the front office, is the majority of people in the front office come right up through the ranks. That's what they do. They work themselves right up to the ranks, up until if you're good enough, you got a chance to be the general manager. But we didn't have the black guys down in that lower echelon that was working in there. This is what we got to do. Just to say you're going to take a guy up, I don't care how many degrees he's got, if he doesn't have nothing in sports relation, he just might not have a chance to succeed out there in that. It's a learning period. But if we would start actually with guys on a lower level, bringing right up through that front office, that's where if we start hiring guys, not just right up top, because this is what a lot of people thinking now, that the Royals here would bring somebody in just right on and make him the general manager or the head of publicity or one of these things in the ball club. It's not going to happen, but you bring him up. Now, like with the Royals, we got two black young men that's in public relations, and they've got a chance to work right on up. We've got some young black women in accounting and in different things, buying. So this is the way to come up to the top, right through that. And the other organizations, if they start doing the same thing, then sooner or later you will see this, because the only thing about it is you have to be there to learn to do these things, because these people didn't know it when they first got there. They had to learn it. Marja Schott was a stupid thing that Marja Schott did. But it was probably a thing that Marja Schott had said all the time. And you know, you got to realize this, Rob. You know, a lot of people, I think when she said that, she actually didn't think that it was rubbing somebody wrong. She really didn't. She was actually thinking that it was all right to say the words that she was saying. She wasn't thinking about a lot of people wouldn't resent it. She was just that stupid about that, wherein she could have been also intelligent about something else. But this, she's actually, this is one of the big things we've had. The people just been actually using us as if we weren't there. No, she doesn't understand because, you know, in the statement she made, she's got some people working for her, and one of the men, whatever it was, I don't think he was what I want to say is he wasn't the Aryan type American. Well, so she called him a boy. Say she had a boy, and this is a term that's resented with minorities because this is the way the whites would refer to a black or a Mexican or whoever. You were boy. And she made this statement, and she didn't even remember making it. It didn't mean anything to her, but, you know, it a lot of people didn't like her saying these things. Well, it would be now see what you got to say about all of the bad things you can say about baseball. You got a lot of good things to say about baseball. You got a lot of good things to say about baseball. Cause where can a guy with a high school education go out and make $3 million a year? That's white, black, green, gray, Mexican, whatever, can make this type money. So these are the things. But actually, I think what you are thinking about, you want somebody there, the way I feel, somebody that can actually call the shots, somebody that can hire and fire, somebody that can actually run the organization. These are some of the positions you would like for somebody to be in those positions. Because, all right, you've got people just like the president of the National League was a black man, but you know what the president of the any league is. You are hired by the people that own the show. So you actually do what the people on the show want you to do. If you don't, see what happened to the commissioner. Is the fact that it's a job that they hire you, wherein the power out there that be would be, say, the Baseball Players Association. Now, that's a different story altogether, because now you got a chance to call some shots. No, well, and one thing about it is, I think that the guy's playing now love the game. But one thing, what you got to understand, that we had been conditioned. That same thing couldn't happen to the young blacks that playing in Major League now. Now it would be a different pill for him to swallow. But with us, we were conditioned to the fact that the major leagues wasn't for us. The major league wasn't for us. So, and we were conditioned to a lot of things where we had to stand back. I tell you what, Rob, what actually we were doing, say, the white boy was actually looking for control and power. This is what you were taught since you were brought up. But what we were actually trying to survive. We were looking for survival. And that's the same thing happened now, I think, with a lot of people. They worry about us getting into organized baseball, in organized sports, or organized anything else where we could have some power. This is what the people fear, that if we get that power, we would want to retaliate. But that's not the story. What we are and always have been trying to survive. Yeah, I think it should be maybe 9 or more guys that should go into the Hall of Fame. And why if the guys were from the East, that committee that was named to pick the ball players, the black ball players to go in the Hall of Fame, they were all people from the East, and they really, really didn't know that much about the ball players in the West. They didn't know that much about the Turkey Stearns or the Hilton Smith or the Bullet Rogan. They didn't know that about them. And this is why they picked the guys that they knew about in the East. And to tell you the truth, they didn't know that much about them, really. Because the committee that they picked, they would see some ball games. The only time they would see the Western ball club is when we would come out east and we played four-team doubleheaders in the different parks. So we would make one trip a year out east, and so would most of the other teams from the West. So they probably saw them maybe one ball game, and a lot of them, they didn't see him in any ball game. So naturally, this is why they went to the other ball player. Now, as far as the Hall of Fame is concerned, I do believe that it was just tough putting a black guy from the Negro Leagues into the Hall of Fame if they were competing against the guys from the major leagues. So, of course, when I got on the committee, it was set up in a way baseball players only. Then they started adding something. They added the managers, the executives, the umpires, and the Negro League baseball players. And that was the baseball player that had played had been passed over by the writers and for 23 years. Now he comes to our committee. So, but the last couple of years, they changed that. They put the baseball players on a separate ballot, so we had a better chance of getting a baseball player. But we still, then they put the executive, the umpires, and et cetera, and the black baseball player on one ballot. So now why it's so hard for the black ball player to get in there is the fact that this year we got a Leon Day, and Leon Day is competing against a Charlie Graham, against a DeRocher, and they got all the stats on a DeRocher, they got all the stats on the umpire, they got all the stats on these other players, wherein you don't have too many stats on Leon Day. It's mostly they're going by what I say, or what Marty Irvin say, or Campanella say. But Campanella wasn't there this year. Had Campanella been there, we probably put Day in, because he just missed by the one vote. So what I actually submitted was to put us on a separate ballot. They had us segregated all the time. If they put us on a separate ballot, the Negro League baseball players, then we'd get a chance to put these guys in that, and they won't be competing with the DeRocher's and these guys, and they'd have a chance to go in. And I think this just might go through, and that committee is going to meet in Cooperstown this summer, so, and I think they just might change it. Well, and that I don't know. You know, the names are there. His name is there. So you can never tell. Of course, I've got a problem because I didn't, you know what I mean? I didn't have a chance to play in the major leagues. It wasn't open to me. The fact of it is I might not have made the major leagues, but the thing about it is I didn't have that opportunity. I didn't have the chance to play in the major leagues. And but see, the major leaguers, what actually happened, we were just the major leagues didn't count us no way. And Branch Rickey showed that when he signed Jackie Robinson and then didn't even give anything for him. He just took him. So they didn't, we were just nothing. That's the way they figured it. And so, and our league, we didn't have a pension fund, so it wasn't any pension really for us. But I think this is what baseball could do is give these guys some type pension, but it would have to be the Major League Players Association to do that, because they are the one that runs that, not Major League period. Well, with enough, I'm fighting for it. I'm fighting for it, and if I can get the ear of the right people, it just might not, but I don't know. It might be a tough thing because, you know, players that played in the major leagues, now they up this thing, so a guy playing in the major league now and he get him 10, 15 years, he just might come with a pension for $50,000, $60,000 or more, wherein they got some ball players there that played earlier, that major league ball players, they just might get $200. And they got the money there, but they aren't doing anything, you know, to help these players. Yeah, well, it's some of the guys are in trouble, just like some of the guys were in any other walk of life would, you know, kind of be in trouble. They get sick and things, and only thing they got is a Social Security, and that was the Social Security they piled up in the when they played baseball, and after they got out of baseball, if they had a job, but a lot of the people worked at some things that they really wasn't paying Social Security. So you've got some people that really need money, and Bat is doing a pretty good job on that, helping the indigent Negro League baseball player. All right, Rob. I sure will.